is Dave Arnold, your host of Cooking Issues, coming to you live from the heart of Manhattan, New York City, Rockefeller Center, Newsstand Studios, joined as usual with Joe Hazen. How you doing?
I'm doing well, man. Great to see you.
Great to see you. We
do not, show today.
Yeah, we do not have John. He had to, unfortunately, go to a funeral in Belgium, but at least he got to go to Belgium, which is a fantastic place. He's going to bring us back some fancy mustard, maybe for next week when he comes back. We also don't have Quinn, I don't think. He's still sick. We have Quinn. We have Quinn from the upper left corner.
There too.
Hey, yeah. Quinn. Oh, great. Always great to hear from you. I miss you while you've been sick. Always good to have Quinn on the air. And then moving down the left-hand coast, we got Nastasia the Hammer Lopez in L.A. How you doing?
Good. Thank you.
Good, good. And Jackie Molecules also in Los Angeles. I feel like if I could move to Los Angeles, I'm not saying I would move to Los Angeles, but I'm saying if it were possible, I mean, I hate the sun, but I do like the plants you guys have. You know what I'm saying?
Wait, you should announce you're going to be here next week. We're doing, what do the kids call it? You told me yesterday.
Post up. We're posting up at Thunderbolt LA. Yeah, right. Yeah. So it's like, yeah, for those Patreon folks or people that listen, I have to go to, we'll talk about it later. I'm going to film something with the Momofuku Empire next week, and then we can talk about and we can sing the Star Wars theme and all that. Today in the studio, I am super pumped. We're going to have her on earlier, and we had to cancel for sickness reasons. Sola El Whaley is here, author of Start Here, Instructions for Becoming a Better Cook, Internet Cooking Superstar, HBO Max, but beat book, like, writer. Well, welcome.
Thanks for having me. Yeah. I like my arms.
Yeah. Do you know that, like, apparently my wife tells me that, so, like, I was doing, like, kind of weird robot arms there, and when we were visiting schools for my younger son, Dax, I walked outside trying to find my wife, and I did the robot arms using my, like, hands to look for her as though my hands have eyeballs, and she was like, "You look like a freaking nut. What are you doing?" I'm like, "I don't know. I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know what my body does." You know what I mean?
You can't look like a nut here.
That's the great thing about New York. Do you know, way back in the day before 9/11, you could literally walk around New York with a sword, and people would just not look at you. They would just actively not look at you. Uh-huh. You know what I'm saying?
Good way to become invisible.
Yeah.
Carry a sword
and nobody looks at you. You know what I mean? We used to literally go to the High Line and set off giant pyrotechnics and no one would come bother you. New York was an entirely different place back in the day. And not better necessarily, different. Uh-huh. You know what I mean? Like, we definitely had our problems too. But anyway, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah. So, we have someone also behind us. And I know she doesn't have a mic, but we have Serena here.
And
Selena, I just want to have you acknowledge that you're here because I hate not acknowledging people that are in the studio. You can shout, and maybe they can hear you on the... Yeah. So, you know, listen.
She's dying right now. She's shrinking. I can see it.
If you're in the studio, you have an opinion.
Uh-huh.
That's my feeling.
That. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. Or if you're on the telephone, Nastasia Quinn and I was going to say, call in your questions for Sola 2-917-410-1507. That's 917-410-1507 if you're a Patreon member, but apparently someone has already called in. So caller, you're on the air.
Hey, Dave. This is Wes Henderson living in Washington State.
How you doing?
Doing great. We had some sunny weather, and I was making the hatchback the other day, which was delicious, and it got me thinking about grapefruit. And I wanted to try making the Saratoga Paloma, and I can't get out to New York to get any of that water. And I was just wondering, anything I can do to get somewhat close to that?
No. I'm just messing with you. For those of you that don't know, hatchback is grapefruit and tequila and Campari, and I forget what else. It was Karen Jarman's first drink on the menu at Booker and Dax back in 2012. Carbonated, great drink. Sold a lot of those suckers.
Yeah, square foot line too.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Clary Lime. I gotta love Clary Lime. And the Saratoga Paloma is just this crazy, a crazy water from Saratoga, Hawthorne Springs number 3, that is like the saltiest water. It's like a third of the way to ocean salty, but even funkier, like weird. When it comes out of the ground, it's carbonated, but also kind of got a little bit of a sulfur funk. So you gotta like flash it off, and then you add a little bit of that, because too much makes you kind of go to the bathroom, because it's, you know, it's like Epsom salts or like Faso soda, for those of you that have ever had to have a colonoscopy. So you don't put that much of it in there. You put a little bit in, but it's got a very, very, very strong flavor. You know what? I bet you if you put not
like
just...
I have black salt.
Yeah, no, not so. See, that sulfur is going to be too much sulfur. Like, it's not like a panipuri situation. You had the Saratoga Paloma back in the day, right? Or no?
I've never had it.
Oh,
no.
Well, so then I could tell you anything and you would think it's the same drink.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you could just lie to me.
Yeah, I could just lie, but maybe I will. I was going to say maybe my memory is that it's about a third as salty as the ocean, but it's got a lot of stuff in it that, for instance, it turns red when it decarbonates because there's a lot of iron in it. So there's not so much iron that it tastes like sucking on a nail the way that like Bigelay Kina, you know, the, not Bigelay, the, whatever, the Ferrokina, which is, I don't like it. I don't like irony tasting things. Anyway, maybe some Negari. Use some Negari, like a little bit of Negari, along with regular salt, because that's going to add a lot of those other weird minerals. And, you know, it's like, it's stronger than Vichy Catalan by a lot. You could just maybe use more Vichy Catalan, but I don't know. Anyway, I wish I could be more helpful. What you need to do is go to Saratoga.
Is it agar grapefruit? Is it centrifuge grapefruit?
So we always use centrifuge grapefruit. With agar grapefruit, if I don't remember whether I put simple in it, but you scale the simple back and up the grapefruit.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. Good luck with this. Okay. Let us know. Let us know. But of course, it would be easier if you had the original. You know what I'm saying? Anyway.
It would be. Yeah. I don't know. I guess it'll either taste good or not, and I won't know if it's legit.
That's right. All right. It's like, it's like me. Right. I want to find a Samoan restaurant or a Samoan person who can make me these coconut rolls so I know whether they're good before I make them on my own. The Pagi Popo. But because I'm going to make them the way that I want them, which isn't right. I mean, it's not wrong, but it's also, I want to see what it's supposed to taste like. Anyway.
You're going to have to go there.
Oh, man, I'm never going to go there. My whole life, I'm never going to go there. You know, I've never been to Hawaii. My wife was born in Hawaii.
You have even more reason to go there.
I know.
More than the average person.
Yeah, I know. And she's never been back. She's a military kid.
It's time to go.
I know. But it's so far.
You know, you're going to go to California.
Yes.
So tack it on. You're like almost there.
Yeah.
You're like 90% of the way there.
That would never happen.
Yeah, that's Nastasia saying that would never happen. Oh, so now that we're here, we can. So yes, Nastasia. So we're like, this is the portion of the show where we spend a little time shooting the breeze over things we have cooked in the last week, or in this case, two, because we weren't here last week. Did you have anything interesting or things we're going to do? Like I'm going to go to LA. Nastasia and I are going to shoot some stuff with maybe with Dave Chang, maybe not, but at the Momofuku stuff, Major Domo, and is that all blown over now? All the chili crunchness, the crunch, is the crunch crunched out or not? Like,
I don't know.
Yeah, are you following the?
I am following the crunch story. Yeah.
It's so funny. It's like everything ping pongs back and forth, but like I can imagine it happening. Like having been behind the scenes at Momofuku before, some lawyer somewhere was like, you know what? Ain't nobody trademarked the word crunch with the word chili attached to it. It just hasn't been trademarked. I see an opportunity. Let me trademark it. Because they trademark anything and everything, like any lawyer. They get anxious. But then everyone there has a killer instinct. So when someone says, hey, maybe you shouldn't have done that, their first instinct is to be like, whoa, whoa, whoa. I could do what I want. You know what I'm saying?
Uh-huh.
But then it takes a while for them to back down. You know what I'm saying? Because I feel like they're going to make more money in the long run just being like, my bad. Chili crunch is for anybody. You know what I mean? That's more long-term money. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
Anyway, that's my feeling.
I mean, I don't know. We'll see what happens.
Yeah. I mean, look, of all the things, you really think that the word crunch is going to bring down David Chang? No. No. That's not going to happen.
You never know.
I guess that's true.
You never know. We're just here to watch the show.
Yeah. Yeah. Wait, You're just holding out. You're holding out judgment. You're withholding judgment based on not knowing, or based on you have a judgment, but you don't want to say it.
The second one.
I love it. I love it. You know what? Prudent.
Mm-hmm.
Prudent.
That's why Selena's here.
Yeah. To keep you prudent. All right. All right. So did you have anything interesting over the past week that you've been making or doing different from the normal, all the things that you do? Or?
Well, I'm kind of on like a chicken cutlet journey.
Mm.
I don't like chicken breast.
You know why?
Why?
They're not as good.
They're not as good. No, but like we always get a whole chicken and then my husband eats the breast and I eat everything good.
Mm. This is like the opposite of my wife. My wife prefers, she doesn't prefer white meat, like, but she, like for chicken salad, she prefers.
For health?
No, hell no.
Okay.
No.
I think
please.
That's the main reason why people eat chicken breast.
I don't know. For chicken salad, she likes the white. Where on the other end of the line, where you guys sit for like a, for white meat, dark meat, and then also separately for chicken salad? Because I had to make chicken salad last week.
Uh huh.
What are you guys?
We're dark meat guy.
Dark meat guy, Stas?
I'm dark meat. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Dark meat. Yeah.
Quinn.
I mean, I would say I like the breast for cutlets because it gets really thin and, you know, there's no variation in texture. So you can get like a nice, thin, consistent cutlet.
Mm-hmm.
Also, yeah. In terms of like using it up, I like grinding it with duck fat and chicken heart to make a ground.
That's very Quinn. That's very Quinn. All right, with these in mind, so talk about what your cutlet experiments with apparently or were you using breast meat, or is this a use for the breast meat, in other words, or were you doing thigh cutlets?
I'm trying to see if there's a world where I could like chicken breast.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Without, like, I like it if it's dry brined.
We're going to get into this later.
You hate dry brine?
I hate the word. It's salting.
Yeah, I know.
It's so stupid. It's salting. We've been doing it since forever.
But it's the time.
Yeah, but people have salted for a long time.
Yeah, it's just
long time.
How do you explain to people that they have to wait?
Salt? Wait.
It's very hard to get people to
desalt it.
No, well, okay. So as a recipe developer, it's really, really, really tough to tell someone you got to wait 24 hours. They get so mad, they'll move on to the next recipe.
But calling it brining is not going to make them do that anyway. It's not like they brine for long enough if they're going to, like, brine it.
No, it's the sell. It's the marketing. It's the chili crunch.
I hate it so much. I hate it so much. You know what I mean?
Like, I get it, but you got to just...
It's salting.
You need to make people feel like they're doing...
wet salting?
Wet salting?
Yeah.
That sounds disgusting.
Yeah. 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 Wet salt. Yay, baby. Wet salt.
I don't want to go to that party.
The wet salt party?
It's you got to sell it. You got to convince people that there is a point to this. So sometimes you need to add a little term that maybe doesn't need to be there, but it makes you feel sophisticated. I dry and brined this turkey. I understand.
Yeah.
I understand.
Yeah.
But I want people to do it.
You want people to salt?
I want people to salt for an extended period of time.
Uh-huh.
Give it long enough time that, you know, it dissolves, reabsorbs, becomes dry.
Okay. All right. Okay. We have a question on this, I think, later. Wait, so was there a world? Yes. Well, if you salt the hell out of a chicken breast and then fry it real quick, it does taste good.
It does taste good. I was trying to do it without the salt because people want a same day.
The thinner
spontaneous recipe. Breaded and fried is what I tried. Francese, piccata, and like classic panko.
Yeah. Piccata is one of the few words that where it tastes good and sounds cool.
Piccata is good. Francese's not.
No.
I don't want the egg.
No. So here's what I do. See what you think. Have you tested this one? When I take a breast and I'm going to do this, you know, I put it down triangle shape, right?
Mm-hmm.
I take the knife and I cut flap over, so now it's like a bigger triangle.
Uh-huh.
Then I salt it before I pound it, and I pound the salt into it.
Oh, I haven't tried that. I've been salting after.
Yeah. I salt it, and then it also, like, it breaks up the fiber a little bit. You can see it, like, oh my God, what are you doing?
Uh-huh.
Plastic wrap over. Do you plastic wrap over yours?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, because it's real messy.
Yeah.
You frying pan, or do you have a mallet? Or something else?
Rolling pin.
Oh, rolling pin. Uh-huh. Mean. You're mean.
Is that mean?
Yeah. Because it's not, because it's like, because you think about it, you hit somebody and it's got a smaller point of contact.
It's many, many small hits.
Yeah.
To really break down that chicken. You know, that's how life gets at you. Lots of little.
you're like Coubertoning this thing. I like that.
Yeah.
Anyway, see whether you see a different salting beforehand.
Yeah, I'm gonna try that.
I also put a little sugar in.
Okay.
Because I'm always for some reason, for years and years, we were 2-1 on stuff. You know, for like, you know, the hand mixture was like 2 salt, 1 sugar for like fish and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just got in a habit also with chicken, not with beef, pork, chicken, fish.
So do you, in your salt cellar, do you have it already mixed with salt, like with sugar?
No, I should, but I don't. I used to, but like I can't keep things that you can touch anymore because... Sorry to, he doesn't listen, so it's fine. Blow up his, but Booker, my older son, will just like go into it with fish hands. And so like, you know, things get clumpy and he'll also like, he'll like grab into the sugar bowl, like, and then like lift it with the sugar, like over my shelf, over my coffee machine, mm-hmm. over everything, over the floor. And then over where he has like.
How old is he?
22.
22?
22.
So, you're going to say 12.
No, 22. So. Anyway, so salt and sugar in my house are in diner pours. You know, like the R2-D2 diner pour?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Which sucks. They suck to cook out of.
Because
mm-hmm. what you want to do is go...
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm interested to see how I have to change my life because our kid's 7 months.
It all depends.
Can't do anything yet.
Depends on the kid.
Right now, she just hangs out in a cage.
Yeah, yeah, awesome. That's the
easy.
Best time.
Yeah.
That's the best time of life.
You get a lot done.
Yeah. Look, it all depends on the kid.
You know? We'll see.
Yeah, that's the joy of being a parent. You find out that kids are individuals.
22, though, he's not even in your house anymore.
Oh,
right?
Yeah, he is.
Oh, okay. I was like, go back to the salt cellar.
Yeah. Long story. anyway, that was what you're doing, chickens?
Just chickens, trying to like chicken breast.
What I don't like is paying extra for chicken breast.
Any MSG in your chicken salt situation?
Sometimes, yeah.
You use MSG in the book.
MSG really helps the breast.
Yeah, it just makes it taste meatier.
Mm. So Quinn's basically saying that it doesn't have its own flavor and requires MSG. I'm just messing with you, Quinn. I'm just messing with you. Anything to make it taste better is fine. You know what I'm saying? But yeah. All right. So what about you, Quinn? You always have something you like to cook.
Let's see. The other week, we did do a smoked prime rib before I got sick. That turned out pretty good.
Now, do you want smoke? Does it turn out that you want smoke on your prime rib?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it definitely, especially the leftovers, they're very hammy. Mm. But I think we got the ratio of like, how fast you cooked in terms of getting just like, you know, a subtle smoke on the beef. And it was good.
All right. That sounds good. What about you guys? California, anything good?
I went to this new Persian place here in Silver Lake on Sunset called Azizam. I think that's how to pronounce it. And they serve this meatball. It's like a braised beef and rice meatball stuffed with, I think, stone fruit. And it was the size of a softball. I've never seen a larger meatball in my life. It was very good.
So it wasn't like, what the hell, so big? It wasn't like you weren't like, what the hell's happening here? Meatball so big?
I was when they served it, you know. They said, too, they're like, oh, it's a big portion. And I was like, okay, cool. And
they shrugged their shoulders?
A softball.
I always assume when someone's going to do it, they're like, it's a big portion. It's big. You know what I mean? Like. No shrug.
Yeah. Well, we ran into the LA Times. What's his name? Bill from the LA Times, the food critic, and he was like, "Oh, I really recommend the meatball." And he also said it's big, and I was like, "Okay,
right.
It's meatball all about."
So it's not
and
lying.
I was still surprised when it got to the table because, like I said, literally the size of a softball.
Is that as the dish is normally made, or are they like, this is America, meatballs got to be big?
That's a good question. And I don't know. Someone will have to tell me that. The name of the dish was a kofta tabrizi. I don't know if I'm saying that right, but
I don't know either. So I have a similar story from a couple of weeks ago. I went to our storage unit and afterwards, we went to this Mexican place in Stamford. Do you know that Stamford has the worst architecture in the entire country? Stamford, Connecticut? Yeah.
I don't know this.
It's true. Do you ever drive up I-95?
I haven't driven in years.
Oh, well, if someone ever drives you or you take the train up when you're going through Stanford, which is where Nastasia is when she's here, it's like a museum for bad architecture.
Do they like wear this title with pride?
They should.
Yeah.
Yeah. So like that's where Purdue Pharma like started that whole thing in what we like to call the upside down murder castle, which is like every architectural thing gone wrong. Nastasia lives in a nicer Stanford. Nastasia, back me up on this. The buildings in Stanford are a nightmare. She's not going to back me up. She's not going to back that.
Yeah.
So we went to this restaurant and it was a Mexican restaurant, you know, style, you know, like fast food, but they were doing some sort of stuff.
Why would you get Mexican in Connecticut?
Okay. Because I had just worked somebody like a dog for 8 hours and they were dying of hunger and they needed to pee. He looked up on the phone. We asked the guy at the storage place and he said some other place. And the person I was with looked up on their phone and said, I want to go here. And so I say, wherever you want, because you've just helped me, right? Yeah. So anyway, so we go there and they had these like Mexican arancini, right? These like stuffed fried rice balls, but they were the size of your head. They were the biggest things I've ever seen in my life.
And what was inside?
I didn't dare to order one. Oh. I should have just ordered one and thrown the money away, like ordered it. But like, who wants a rice ball that big?
I mean, the ratio of crunch to mush is just wrong.
Yeah, unless it was like a very thin, unless they did it like Nastasia's mom's tamale style, which is like thin masa, a lot of filling, but then it's a lot of filling. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I feel like a rice ball can be anywhere from like golf to like lacrosse ball. Anything bigger than lacrosse ball, I think is kind of a lot.
I really like when they're just like poppable.
You like a poppable rice ball?
Like a little ping pong ball.
Yeah?
Because it's just so much crunch. Yeah, and then you get a little molten center.
And you're like a little bit of cheese in the middle or something?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. I like a rice ball. I do. I first had them on my honeymoon. Maybe that's why.
Where was your honeymoon?
Italy. Well, we went to Rome and like we just went to a crap hole. This is in the 90s, like 95. So back when you could still go to Italy and be like, oh my God. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah. So... Yeah. So, yeah, we were in Rome and we were like, I hear they have rice balls. And we got one. We're like, yeah, good.
Okay, yeah. Yeah. So, but I feel like when you have something somewhere else in like a romantic moment, it's just like attached to you.
Yeah.
This nostalgia.
Well, speaking of cutlets, another thing we had there, of course, was veal, but we rarely make it with veal because who's got the cash is saltine boca.
Uh-huh.
I had that in
I was going to try that.
You should. You know why? Delicious.
Yeah.
Real good.
Can you make it with chicken?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
There are a lot of things you can poultrify, Italian stuff you can poultrify. You ever do the turkey ossobuco?
Turkey ossobuco? Uh-huh. No.
Good.
With the like leg. The leg?
Yeah.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Pull tendons
for Christmas
after.
Or Thanksgiving?
Yeah. Although then I would get the veal because I would be with my mom and she would look at me cross eyed if I did that.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
You know, I always have to come up with a new way to do turkey every year, no matter what. So maybe it'll be ossobuco this year.
Listen, the trick always for me is it's a little messier than real ossobuco because they're turkey legs. You know what I mean? You have to pull the tendons after.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Unless like someday somebody will pull the tendons before, but that's never happened to me. So my thing this week was Stas earmuffs because I know it's going to bother you. I made another pie. Over the last week. So a listener wrote in and said, so I do this thing where I adjust fruit juice to have the same acidity as lemon or lime. And I do it for cocktails, right? Mm-hmm. Acid adjusting. And so this person was like, can you acid adjust juice to make a key lime pie?
Such a good idea.
I know.
Yeah.
It's the best idea I've heard like in years. So like, so I've just been doing it constantly.
Okay.
Right. Constantly. And, Quinn made a calculator on our Patreon site that will like automatically calculate because key limes are a little more acidic than regular limes, which is why when you make it with regular lime juice, it's too sweet
mm-hmm.
because regular limes are about 6% acidity, more or less, give or take. And key limes are like 7%. Right. So it's like, you know, more anyway. So, I did a, pineapple chiffon, which, you know, if we have time later, we can talk about this pineapple recipe that I was showing you before. So I was doing a pineapple chiffon, but, instead of leaving it just sweet, I acid adjusted it up to lime, so it was like a real tart pineapple chiffon.
Do you do that with just citric acid?
No. I use a mixture of citric, malic, and succinic to have it really hit. You could just do it with citric, but it wouldn't be, it wouldn't be as limey. It would just, it would taste less like, it would taste less like lime.
Wait, what was the third acid?
Succinic.
I don't know what that is.
A little what?
I don't know what that is.
It's a it's an acid that on its own tastes like bad. Like what I always say. My description is like you bit your tongue after you were eating an oyster shell, or like you cut your tongue on an oyster shell. So kind of mineral and bloody. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? But a tiny bit of it. We're talking like a tiny, tiny bit, like 0.04%, like tiny. Mm-hmm. I make an 8% solution and then just, you know, add like a half milliliter to every 100 mils of juice. And but that little bit gives it that kind of back of the throat, peely lime hit.
Oh, okay.
And it lasts forever. You buy a container, a little packet of it at what's it called? Modern's Pantry, and you use so little of it that it lasts forever. Speaking of Modern's Pantry, I heard you got a spin saw.
I did. I'm really excited to use it. Don't know when that's going to happen.
Don't know where, don't know when.
But I think the crazy thing is we ordered it before I was even pregnant. Wow. We waited longer for the spin saw than the baby.
Okay, well, get this. Nastasia has always felt there's some sort of baby food juju with it, but we've never figured it out. Right, Stas?
Yes.
We just don't know what it is.
Maybe you should use it for that.
No, no. Do you know, I'll tell you a secret about the Spinzol. It's not a secret. I'll tell anyone that will listen. But my mom's a cardiologist, just recently retired, pediatric cardiologist. And they had a patient where the baby couldn't have fat for the first several months of its life, couldn't have fat. I forget what the condition is. But it turns out that a Spinzol can spin the fat out of human breast milk so that the mother can still do not technically breastfeeding, but can, you know, all the benefits of breastfeeding other than the social ones and with the Spinzol. And then we gave it to another person. So now we're trying to figure out how to push this into the hospital market. It's like every OBGYN unit should have one so that in case you have a baby, all of a sudden you could, you know what I mean? You know what I'm saying?
Because you
could just hand it off to a person and let them take it home for the couple of months they need it and then hand it back to the hospital. You know what I mean?
I feel like that would never work.
What do you mean?
There's so much like bureaucracy. Just getting her social security number. It was a nightmare. Really? I don't think they could handle a Spinzol.
The hospital does that for you? It's like buying a car now? They give you the social security number in the hospital?
They're supposed to. They're supposed to set it up for you, and you're supposed to call them and get it back, and then you can set up your insurance.
It really is like getting a car.
I can't imagine if they had to do like a Spinzol program.
Imagine it. Well, it's very rare. It's only when it's when there's a lot of intervention. So usually you have a pretty on-point person at that point.
What you should do is set it up with the insurance company. To get them to cover it, like they do with the breast pumps.
Oh, they cover breast pumps now?
Yeah.
Really?
Uh-huh.
Wow.
One, I believe.
Well.
How many do you need?
Yeah, how many do you need? are those pumps still as bad as they used to be?
I mean, I don't know what they were like, but I hated it.
They make a crazy noise. Aside from anything else, like they're like used to make crazy noises.
Well, and they just make you feel terrible. So I stopped at 6 months and I'm like a person again. It's really exciting.
Yeah.
I'm back. Yeah. Yeah. But the first thing we wanted to make in the Spinzol was there was like a banana drink you had at Booker. Yeah. That was our favorite.
Oh, nice.
Cocktail.
Oh, beautiful.
So we're going to clarify banana.
Bananustino. That's the way to do
it. That's what it was called.
Yeah.
I had a lot of those.
Nice. Well, appreciate it. Well, you know, maybe soon. I don't know if we're going to put that. We should put that on the menu again. So like Fabulous and Jeremiah from Contra, who we're going to do a bar program with them. I'm like, let me put some oldies but goodies on. And Jeremiah's like, I don't know, maybe it should be all new. I'm like, I don't think it has to all be new.
Do a throwback menu.
Yeah, I mean, just sometimes special pop-up.
Yeah, yeah, people would be excited about that.
You know what a nightmare pop-up is.
They are nightmares. Yeah, they are, but they're fun.
I mean,
I feel like it's always worth it.
Okay.
Maybe not a day, do like a week.
Because
a day is stupid.
Yeah.
I hate like single day pop-ups. Absolute nightmare. You set up an entire restaurant for a day.
Yeah. But who makes money in a pop-up?
Nobody does. It's just fun marketing, branding.
For the record, eyes rolled when she said fun. yeah. All right. All right. So let me get to some questions for you before we run out of time. So this is a chicken cleaning question.
Okay.
Are you interested in chicken cleaning? You have theories on it?
I don't know. Now I'm worried.
Dave Kleiman, so I have an issue with not cleaning chicken, i.e., in other words, doesn't like it when people don't clean chicken.
Like wash it?
Correct.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And this is McGee's new thing is that there's a whole thing. Do you familiar with the whole, this is like
no,
the chili crunch thing.
I don't know the whole thing.
So there was backlash against washing chicken put out by the USDA because they put like images of like cartoons of like spatter of like salmonella, Phil spatter getting all over the kitchen. But then further research shows that, you know, that's not the case. And so, you know, McGee is a wash if you want to kind of a guy.
Okay. I recently got internet backlash for telling people not to wash their chicken.
Well, so you are a party to the bull crap.
To the no, don't wash?
To the either way. If someone, like, that's why, like, I just shut up about it.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I just don't want to deal with it.
The one thing, okay, even if you're not spreading salmonella, it does make it harder to sear.
Yeah, well, it depends on how long you're going to wait. Huh? After you salt it?
Yeah.
Am I right?
The dry breading.
Okay. So I really have an issue with not washing chicken, which often comes with factory odors, off smells, who knows else what's growing on it. By the way, a lot of factory odors are from bags, and just opening the bags will make the odor go away. Like on meat, that sulfur smell flashes off. That's just my 3 cents. I use a special outside sink just to wash raw stuff. Well, isn't that nice, Dave? Wouldn't that be nice to have an outdoors? Anyway, and the entire area gets sanitized after I soak my raw meats. I've done the weighing test, and honestly, the meats, fish, and poultry I've soaked haven't gained any significant weight during the soaking. Furthermore, if they did so, they lose it again if I hang them to dry in the fridge for a few days with koji spices or even nothing on them. So just asking, really? Discuss further. So apparently, maybe Dave was part of this whole Megillah with you and the washing, not washing.
Yeah, a lot of people yelled at me, and I did some more research, and I don't care anymore.
There you go.
I don't care. Do whatever you want, okay?
Yes.
But it also made me realize that I don't get the kind of chicken most people get, because I'm usually going to a butcher, so it's not often put in a bag.
Right.
So I don't have the same off smell, and I know that 90% of people don't get chicken like that.
They do not.
So
they're getting in a puffy thing with that little absorbent Megillah underneath.
Yeah. So my bad. I'm sorry to the world. I made everybody mad.
Yeah. So I had a butcher and his assistant's name was Ray and Michael was his name. And I just made, you made me think about buying chicken from a butcher because I haven't in so many years. I haven't had a butcher in like my own butcher. I haven't had my own butcher in like 12 years. And
you can bring this back into your life. This is New York.
But
there's always
not
a butcher nearby.
I know, but like, I don't know. I just felt I didn't find a new one when I moved because, like, you know, I knew him. I knew his family. Like, we bought each other. Like, yeah, I bought him a wedding gift. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And Ray could rip the skin off of a chicken leg in under 2 seconds using his apron. And he would just sit there going, boom, 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 whole box of chicken.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I need a butcher again.
You need a new Ray.
Where do you live?
I live in the East Village.
Okay.
There's
you
a lot of options.
But didn't you say in the book you couldn't get Diamond where you are?
Diamond Crystal Kosher?
Yeah.
Not until recently. Now Fresh Direct has it.
What?
You read the book?
Yes, but you couldn't.
Nobody reads the book before these things.
Hey, man. Like, but you can't go to like a Key Foods or something? They don't have the Diamond?
No. There has been in the last like year or two, but it's usually been Morton.
Yeah, I hate
but
Morton.
Now there's Diamond at like the bodega.
Yeah, I hate Morton like a lot.
Yeah, I do too.
Yeah,
but also people yell at me for that, so I don't care. Just hey,
listen. No, but that's not really a matter of opinion. Morton's not as good.
Okay.
Because it's it tastes the same, but it doesn't hold as well.
It's harder to use.
Yeah,
and like it slows you down because I want to be able to take a fistful of salt and season like a whole tray of stuffs.
Yeah.
You can't.
You need to be able to do it and you can't judge. You're either going to go over or under with Morton's.
It's really hard to gauge how much salt you're putting on something when you're dry brining.
You're a killer.
I'm going to try and use it as many times as possible.
You're a killer. Yeah. But you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's just not as good of a product.
I'm just getting sick of getting yelled at on the internet.
But
so
why would anyone
care.
Yell at you about Morton's?
Because people yell at me about everything.
It's just objectively worse to cook with.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. Yeah. We're on the same page.
But I don't really think that's opinion. Like, okay. Anyway, but one thing you do say is that, and I'm curious when you handed in the copy, that you say you enjoy seeing the crystal diamond box, and they changed their freaking box. I hate the new box. It's taller than it used to be. It doesn't fit where it used to fit. What are your feelings on the new diamond box? First of all, why change an iconic box?
Yeah, so I was really mad at first. And same thing, I had to move the storage. It had to go to a different shelf because it didn't fit anymore.
Yeah.
So like that, I had to fully rearrange my pantry because I always have at least three boxes. But it's grown on me.
Really?
It's grown on me. I've been looking at it a lot. I'm over it.
I can't even, there's a pattern on it now and I can't even look at it. I don't even know what the pattern is because it makes me so angry. So you're saying I should chill and just like stare at the box for a while?
Yeah, just stare at the box for a while. And I like it now. Okay. I really hated it, but it's grown on me. And then on the back, they have these like line drawings of how to use salt, which I think is kind of cute. So just put it like somewhere you can see, stare at it for a while, and you're going to like it. Now I actually think it looks more classic and retro than the old design. The old design looks more 90s. Huh. This is, I feel like it's taking us to the 60s.
Oh. And now I have to go back and look at like every year of more of a diamond crystal box. Anyway, Dave had a couple more questions about washing. So, and you do a lot of rice work in the book. If you're interested in rice, you do a lot of rice book. And by the way, before I even get to his question, you mentioned something that I've never had the guts to try. So in your risotto, you're like, you could use, so you're like carnaroli, arborio, sushi rice. And I was like, what?
It's good.
I'm not saying it's not, but I've never had the guts to try it. And I have sacks of like Coco Rose, like sitting around because Booker loves sushi rice. And you know, that's one of the things he knows how to make. Again, giant mess, but you know, with the fanning and all of nightmare, but I've never tried it. Was there a difference? Is it different, but good? Or is it just pretty much similar?
I feel like it's very similar. Yeah, especially if you take the time and like toast it.
Yeah.
And we often have sushi rice, but we don't always have risotto rice because we have a lot more sushi rice.
It's also overpriced.
It is overpriced. And I think it's fine. Just like use some tamaki gold.
Yeah. The very, very, very good sushi rice is still not nearly as expensive as okay carnaroli or arborio.
Because it's branding. Because it's Italian.
If you say dry brine again, I'm just about to whoops. Because I made a style of risotto last week. So that's the thing I was going to say last week, other than the pie. So we had JJ with what was JJ's book called? The rice book. When he came on, what's his book called? I'll get it. Anyway, from Field Trip Restaurant.
Yeah.
And so he was talking about John John mushrooms, which is a Haitian mushroom. And I'd never had it before he came on the show, and I've been buying it. It's really expensive, though. It's like $14 for a little bag at Calustian's, but it tastes delicious. I highly recommend the John John. So I did a cold soak because cold soaks taste better on mushrooms. I'm sorry. Cold soak just tastes better. You can heat it afterwards, but you got to cold soak it for a while. I've done some tests. That's my opinion. You can have it. You can leave it. And I made a risotto where instead of broth, I used John John.
Oh, and that was it.
Well,
that was flavorful enough.
Well, you know, I grind up parsley and garlic and shallots and thyme. I didn't put the clove in and onion and butter.
Okay, so it was like everything and John John mushrooms.
And John John mushrooms. Okay. But instead of using like and you know white wine, but instead of using, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And it's like this like cool black color.
Uh huh.
Yeah, it's like it's black risotto.
Okay, I'm gonna try these.
Yeah. John John. And I love the word, John John, D-J-O-N, John John.
If you keep talking about it, it's only going to get more expensive.
I doubt it could get. How is it going to get more expensive?
That's how things work. Everything's a lie. Pricing is a scam.
That's true. You ever deal with liquor people? It's the worst.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a complete, it just, they're like, we don't know how much we want to charge for this yet. We got to figure out which person we want to buy it. And that's how much we're going to charge for it. Mm-hmm. Really? They're like, yeah. I'm like, gross. So on rice, as for rice, back to Dave, it's obvious that it should get washed as you insist, but rice can be full of all sorts of contaminants such as rodent feces and whatnot. Gross. I've never seen rodent feces in my rice. Although I did have a whole bag of rice, like a 10 or 15 pound bag unopened that had weevils in it. So something had gotten in it. And because I had not opened the bag, I didn't vac it down. Nightmare.
Wait, you vacuum seal everything after you open it?
I get like 50 pound sacks of grain. So sometimes the grain is like staying around.
How do you have room for that? Where do you live?
So this is a bone of contention in my family.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Like, so I'm only allowed to have a certain amount, but I buy the 1/2 gallon mason jars and I seal down 1/2 gallon mason jars with it because that it's enough to kill and nothing ever grows. And so since I started doing that, I've never had weevils ever. And I have a lot of grain in the house. You know, I've had problems with hams getting attacked by bugs. Anything I used to keep open in large containers or whatever, like it's, you know what? It's okay till it's not.
So if anything goes down and there's a food shortage, we all go to your house.
Yeah, yeah.
You're ready.
We're good. I got the, as long as we have power, I've got the grinder and we're good to go.
Okay.
It's obvious it should get washed as you insist, rodent feces. So to me, that would seem like also a cross-contamination risk. It just seems a little contradictory. So they're still on this whole don't wash chicken thing.
Still talking about
the chicken.
I don't know where you're getting rice with rodent feces. Like, yeah. Buy your rice somewhere else.
Yeah.
That's my only advice.
I have to say, when you get 50-pound sacks of grain, sometimes they're real clean and sometimes they're not. It's really weird. It's like sometimes they're really clean and sometimes they're really not.
Well, you know how I buy chicken in a way most people don't? You buy grain in a way most people don't.
Accurate.
You know?
Accurate. But on another note...
Is this the same guy?
Same guy. On another note, he appreciates your encyclopedic cooking knowledge that they always seem to turn to in your former position at the magazine that will not be named. So I know you've been doing 101 style vids for the, because of the book, but some of us would love to see some of your more advanced and difficult techniques or tricks as well on the tubes.
I mean, I want to do like a part two, like a harder book.
Would that be a two?
Like
so
keep going.
Yeah. So, but like, yeah, yeah. Like, but what would you call it? Like,
I don't know. Level up, level up.
There you go.
But they said no one would buy that.
Who said that?
The publishers. They said no one buys advanced cookbooks.
Listen. You can do whatever you want. At this point, you can do whatever you want.
I don't think so.
I think at this point, you can do whatever you want. I think so.
You know, I'd still like to make a living. I'd like the book to sell.
And I think people will buy it.
You think people will buy it?
Look, 1 billion people bought Kenji's first book, right?
Uh-huh.
Food Lab. And then he's like, I want to write a 1,000-page book on woks.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And did it sell as much as Food Lab? No. But it sold because he's Kenji and everybody had Food Lab. You could do what you want.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I don't know. I'll think about it. But yeah, I would like to.
Yeah. People appreciate honesty from people. You're honest in this book. You'd be honest in the other book. People appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
I think. That's my opinion. Okay. Now, I'm not rich, so don't listen to me. But that's just my feeling. Jason Lin. Hey, so I've been a huge fan since the Serious Eats days. My question is, has your approach to recipe development changed with the shifts in the way that people predominantly access food media? And if so, in what ways? Thinking along the lines of print recipes to digital articles to long and short video formats. And if you want to, like TikTok lunacy.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think I have a different strategy for every outlet. Like with something like New York Times, they want easy weeknight meals. Stuff that you use minimal bowls and happens in 40 minutes. So, because it's like people who are looking to New York Times cooking food, they just like need help on a Wednesday night. So I go really simple. And then for like, the book, I was kind of thinking more about teaching, because when you have a book, you can like sit down and take more time with it. It's not just like, I need something right now. I need to get dinner on the table now. So that's why a lot of the recipes in the book maybe take a little bit longer. The writing is a little bit longer. I go more into detail because I want it to be more about teaching you instead of just like, here's a quick recipe. And then with Instagram and TikTok, I think you just have to like get people's attention, and it doesn't necessarily have to be executable dishes.
Mm.
People just want to see you do something. Like one of my biggest TikTok videos is just me making pie crust that no one is going to make, but people just like seeing how this mass of flakes turned into a dough.
They just watch it with no...
It's more entertainment.
Huh.
I think TikTok and Instagram's entertainment. The book is teaching, and then other outlets like New York Times, Bon Appetit, is more like a resource.
Yeah.
I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, it makes sense to me. I don't know if it makes sense to...
I don't know if I answered the question. Yeah.
I think you answered it. Azu writes in, hey, Solo, big fan. Was sorry to hear about the annoying gatekeepy comments you get when you put out brown recipes. You could talk about that if you would like to. My girlfriend is from Bangladesh and has always been excited by the prospect of getting to see more Bangladeshi recipes from you due to the lack of English resources. Any plans for future recipes in that vein? Would completely understand if you felt it wasn't worth the baggage of dealing with toxic randos on the internet. Food content on Instagram seems to have some of the most toxic comment sections I've seen anywhere. And also, would you happen to know, or would you be willing to say if you do happen to know anything, if Stella Parks, that's Brave Tart, for those of you that don't know people's names and monikers, is ever coming back?
I don't know if I'm allowed to speak for her.
Yeah.
Well, but she's alive and well.
Yeah.
She's doing great.
Great.
Stay tuned.
Yeah.
I like making a Bangladeshi cookbook is something that I also thought about because I think it'd be great to do something kind of like Rick Martinez going through the different regions of Bangladesh, because it is a lot of people, their perspective on it is they don't know what's different from it compared to Indian food, and what little they know about Bangladeshi food, it's like a monolith, and it's very divided by all these rivers. There's very unique cuisine and culture in every little corner. But I am afraid of getting yelled at. Like, I'm so tired of it. Yeah. And that's why I don't make as much Bangladeshi food on the internet. Every time it's just like such a headache that I'm like, maybe I should just make pasta.
Well, do you think it's like the kind of more reach you get, the more a-holes you also have to deal with? Or like, is it like this sort of like punishment, the bigger your reach, like the more you have to get like this thick skin against a-holes?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I also kind of get where they're coming from because it is an underrepresented cuisine. So they really want to see it showcased in the way they know it. You know, they really want to see the korma their mom made. But the fact is, there's a million kinds of korma.
Oh, so you're getting it from both sides or one side. Who's causing you the most problems?
What do you mean?
So the gatekeeping, you're saying that like from the Bangladeshi community.
It's the Bangladeshi community. Like I'll spell a word slightly different than the spelling they might know. But the fact is, Bangla translated to English, it's like, there's a lot of ways to go with it. You know, the words don't directly translate. The sounds aren't exactly overlapping. But I understand because you want to see it presented the way you know it.
Yeah.
I totally get that. But I can't be everybody's Bangladeshi person. Does that make sense?
Yeah. No, I mean, like, you know, the Museum of Food and Drink, which is, you know, the project I've been on forever, like that we've always kind of fought against someone saying that any one person has to represent some sort of weird false authenticity. Everybody's experience is authentic to their experience and to where they come from. So it's weird to have to stand in for everybody's experience.
Yeah, yeah.
It's bizarre.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, I understand because there's just not enough people out there representing this cuisine.
Right.
It's also difficult because I'm Bangladeshi, but I grew up in LA. I'm like born and raised in LA. So
is there a big community there?
Huge. So my perspective on the food is shaped around the ingredients available there. You know, it's not authentic to someone growing up in Dhaka. And I'm sorry for everyone there who's mad at me.
Right. But like but that's the thing is like, I mean, cuisine is supposed to change when it moves.
Yes.
That's how everything happens.
It always has throughout history and time. But I think it's scary now because it's happening at a faster pace than. It's like how you're talking about Italy in 1995 versus Italy now.
Yeah.
Like the first time I went to Italy, it was like 2003 and it was like life changing. I don't remember having a smartphone. I feel like I had to use a map to get around.
Can you imagine? Yeah. Right.
And
yeah.
Everything, every single like place I went in Italy, like Rome was different from Cinque Terre, was different from Florence. And now everything's just an Instagram filter. Oof. Of Italy. But I feel like it's kind of what's happening with food. Everything's kind of like blending together and it's making people more protective of their perspective on it, if that makes sense.
Right. Although, yeah, some people have always been that way though.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
they have a voice now.
Yeah. MJ, what do you think that is? 10,021. I'm going to say that's how MJ pronounces it. Hello. I'm working on my karaage recipe and I'm trying to get a crisp exterior that stays crispy longer. compared to my karaage, I can never pronounce that right. Some that I have seen seems much airier. I generally use potato starch, and once the marinated chicken wets out the starch, I give it one more dunk before dropping into the hot oil. Other than different starches, is there anything that you think I can try to get an airier and longer lasting crunch? Thanks.
Other than different starches? So my first thought was crisp coat.
Yeah, people buy a lot now. Crisp coat's good.
I mean, I feel like we fry everything at home with it. It does make a difference, but
what percentage? Because remember, like not being industrial means you can use a lot more of these expensive starches than, you know, a regular industrial concern can, because they cost a lot more, but mm-hmm. not that much more compared mm-hmm. to what you're doing in your life. You know what I mean? So, what do you think?
I just eyeball it.
Eyeball it
with the spoon.
Because they used to say National Starch, which is now Ingredi, Inspira, whatever they call themselves now. Janet Carver is still running that. I would like to have her on the show one day. Anyway, I think they used to say 10%.
Oh.
But I feel like we all use more than 10%.
I definitely use more than that.
Yeah.
But, I mean, besides starch, my other thought is just, like, oil temp.
Yeah, my feeling is it's hard to give any advice unless you know all of their steps, because mm-hmm. there are 30 ways to crispy. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? Mm-hmm. But like just intervening in the fifth step to crispy is not necessarily going to help somebody unless you know what the first four steps and the next four steps are. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah.
Man, that's my feeling.
Yeah.
It's hard.
Yeah.
It's like people like, it's like a, you know, why isn't this working? I don't know. Tell me everything you did.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, tell me all the things.
Like, did you dry brine the chicken?
Oh my God, you're killing me. Arturo says, and I don't know which El Pastor place Arturo is referring to, but have you been to the Tacos Al Pastor place yet? Which one?
I think I know which one they're talking about.
All right. Which one are they talking about?
I recently did a podcast about El Pastor, like the history of it. And my husband went to that place in Greenpoint.
Okay. Was it any good?
It's incredible. I can't remember what it's called, though.
It's fine.
The El Pastor place in Greenpoint.
There you go.
It is. Have you been there?
No.
You have to go.
Do they have the pineapple on top with the cut?
Yes. And they dry brine their meat.
First of all, is it laminated up on the big thing?
Right. So it's really cool. So instead of doing slices like most people do and stack it up, they cut it like an accordion style. So it's one giant sheet of meat.
Okay. Sheet of meat. That's my next band.
Uh-huh. And then they like fold it, ripple it together. And then they also do a dry brine marinade. So it kind of is like a sausage vibe where it combines. So when they slice it, it doesn't all fall apart. It kind of sticks together.
Huh.
And it gets so crisp. It's so flavorful. I think it's like you've been to Tacos Numero Uno, right?
Which one's that? Is that the one in
Chelsea Market?
Yes.
This is miles above that. And I love Tacos Numero Uno.
Yeah. I mean, to me, Al Pastor is a volume trick. If you're not serving a crap ton of it, if you're not constantly uh-huh. cutting off of it and using a high heat, it's not going to be as good. You know
yeah.
what I mean?
Like, yeah. Yeah. Definitely.
I make a great Al Pastor. Really? How many do you serve? Like 10 an hour. Nope.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, this just doesn't work. Oh, speaking of it, you reminded me, Jack, I forgot to ask you when you told me how big that meatball was. Texture of the meatball, was it meatloaf texture? Like, so how bound was the meat in the meatball? Because like, I don't like it when it's overbound.
No, it wasn't overbound. It was maybe somewhere between meatloaf and like a smaller, you know, regular meatball.
Okay. So, but like,
if that makes sense.
So they hadn't over salted and worked the meat before they formed it into a ball?
No, I don't think so. No.
Yeah. Don't you hate when they overwork a meat like that and then they dry it out? I hate that.
I'm sorry. Right behind you, Selena pulled up the name of the taco place.
What's the name of the place?
Taqueria Ramirez. She's just holding up a note.
Nice. All right. So see, we have the internet. We can do this.
Yeah.
All right. And so I can get to it before we start asking my own questions. Sam Silverman wants to know, when's Big Brunch coming back? Which is with
I don't think it's coming back.
No? What's he like to work with? Is he an okay guy?
Yeah,
I know Will, but I don't know Dan. Obviously, I don't know.
No, I think everyone was surprised by how well the three of us got along. Just like clicked. It was a very good, I don't know, I guess that's what... What is that called where you talk and they see if you like each other?
I don't know. I've never
chemistry
done that.
Chemistry test.
Oh,
I guess that's why.
Is that a thing?
Yeah, yeah. Before, whenever you do a show with other people. You do like a Zoom together and you just hang out to see if you guys like click, vibe, or hate each other.
This is why nothing I ever try to do works.
Chemistry
I fail
test?
The chemistry test. Yeah. All right. I haven't, I should check it out. It's on HBO. I have HBO.
Yeah. Check it out.
Yeah.
Tell your friends. Maybe it'll come back. I don't know how these things are.
I don't know. All right. So, I don't remember where it is because this is something I read the last time we're going to come on. Bone to pick before we, you know, we have 5 minutes left. Bone to pick. I feel if you don't like pressure cookers, it's because you're following somebody else's technique that's not right with the pressure cooker.
Okay. Tell me about pressure cookers.
I understand what you're saying. I forget the exact term that you use, but
I said that I feel like when you cook meat in a pressure cooker, the sauce tastes better than the meat. So I prefer just like low and slow.
Right. Like I was, the vibe I got was like, you're like, I don't want it to taste like pot-au-feu. I want it to taste like, you know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So you have to drastically reduce the liquids.
Yeah.
And then figure out a way to not get it to scorch. So it's like, you know, like.
It's just easier to just. No. Not do that.
No, but I love the way, like when like properly done, uh-huh. Like I don't like beans in a pressure cooker because beans require evaporation. Very few dishes, I think, require the evaporation. They just require good, this is the book I was supposed to be writing, moisture management. They just require good moisture management, uh-huh. Right?
Wait, are you writing a book called Moisture Management?
Yes, but I put it on pause to do the 10th anniversary of the cocktail book, and then I got to get back to moisture management. Everyone who listens to this show says I should call it moisture management, and
everybody else says I should not. Just listen to me with the branding and the marketing.
Yeah.
It just sounds like.
How about this?
Yeah.
About this. Ready?
Uh-huh.
The miracle of moisture management.
No. It just doesn't sound like it's about food.
The miracle of moisture management. No? No? All right. Anyway, I feel like, you know, I go through a lot to kind of get the moisture levels to come out right when you open it so it doesn't taste like you've done a braise with too much liquid.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Or a stew. I know you go into the difference between braise and stew. The wavy line between... No.
I was like worried about you reading it. I don't know, because you know what you're talking about.
Yeah,
Most people don't.
Like, look, I think there's obviously any cook you're going to agree with and disagree with thing, but I love the approach. And for instance, this sushi thing blew me away. And also, I want to know because I have never made halva, and you're like, Americans' halva game blows anyway, because we don't know anything about it. So, like, and I was going to ask you, because you call out some brands of tahini, which actually aren't easy to get locally. I don't think the ones that what do you do when you get a tahini that is just like a brick with the oil on top? Is there any decent way to stir that back together? It just sucks.
You have to take it out of the jar.
You can't do it in the jar.
It's annoying, but I'll put it in a bowl and whisk it.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's worth it because once you take a second, do it well, it'll hold for a little bit.
Freaking hate that. Because is there anything stiffer than when you try to jam the spoon into the bottom and then try to get that? Is there anything stiffer than that?
No, it doesn't. It doesn't work. But you just gotta make a bowl dirty.
Yeah. So you call out like chickpea halva. Have you ever tried any of those? Like, what are those other ones like? The texture of those?
I tried one. I tried a chickpea one recently.
Good.
And it was delicious. I couldn't nail the texture. I've only tried it once. I need to try it again. But really, really good flavor. You kind of make a roux with chickpea flour and ghee. And then you add the, I was trying to do the pulled halva. So you have to set the sugar in like a mold, like a ring mold. So it cools down at an even rate.
We have 2 minutes.
And then you pull it. But I like poured it on a Silpat. So the edges crystallize. But the flavor is so amazing.
Yeah.
I'm gonna try it again.
Yeah. Oh, well, are you going to post a recipe for it?
I don't know.
People don't care.
A lot of these things in private.
Oh, yeah. All right. I mean, that's the kind of stuff that's the kind of content I'm like, ooh, chickpea halva. Like, because I'm also fascinated with this idea of like the interchangeability in Italian cuisine, in like Southern Italian cuisine of like chestnuts and chickpeas. You know what I mean? Like we make this cookie with chestnuts or chickpeas if we don't have chestnuts. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, interesting. When you were at Del Posto, were you savory side or pastry side?
Savory.
Savory side.
That's where I made those tiny arancinis.
Yeah, there you go.
Well,
oh, yeah, those are going to have to. Did you have to put the gold dust all over them?
Yeah. Those were really hard because the center were completely molten.
Yeah?
So it was pretty tough to roll, but, you know, you get yelled at enough, you figure it out.
Hopefully you're being yelled at by people days is over. Hopefully that is over in the kitchen in general. Homemade mayo, you actually think it's worth it, huh? Come on. What if I'm going to add a bunch of flavor to it? Then not, right?
I still think it's worth it.
Okay. You have to convince me. Here's an idea. Here's an idea whose time has come. Deviled egg dip. What? What? Because nobody wants to pick up. I do. I'll eat a whole plate of deviled eggs myself because deviled eggs are delicious.
Uh-huh.
But like this deviled egg dip, I thought this was a genius idea. Are people going crazy for deviled egg dip? Does people even picked up on the fact that you can make deviled eggs into the flavor of deviled egg into a dip? I noticed no paprika, instead like the Akura, but that's fine.
Uh-huh.
Like we can be different.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But like, have people picked up on this?
I believe so. Yeah, I think so.
All right, nice. Joe's gonna kick me off the air before I get to all my questions. But listen, Sola, come back anytime you want.
Okay, cool.
The book is Start Here, Instructions for Becoming a Better Cook by Sola El Whaley. Buy it anywhere you buy fine books. It's I think we have it for our Patreon people on discount at Kitchen Arts and Letters, where I hope you buy your books if you're from New York City. Thanks for being on Cooking Issues.